Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Justin Robert Young.
Oh my God. Oh my God. You're back.
No, Justin, we talked about this. When the replicant returns, we just act.
Oh my God. Brian. Andrew is back.
No,
he's dead and a robot. And
you can't.
And
no, you. It's just going to mess him up. His software is still forming.
What am I?
On for so long,
don't tell him that. You got to sell
it. By the way, Bryce is our producer of our show and the fourth member of the team here.
Bryce, how are you not freaking out?
It's crazy. He's back.
Look, Android Main was very expensive. Do not break him already.
If he's so expensive, how can we break him so easily?
He's very fragile and expensive. It's a twofer.
Well, it's good to have you back, Andrew.
It is good to be back, guys. I am happy to be here.
You said this one was expensive?
Okay, not as expensive. Look, we really got to goose the Patreon this week, guys.
Can you do 1.5 speed? Like, just
your Google Android Cloud account is about to expire. I've never left, guys. I've always been here.
I mean, in our hearts.
Yeah.
We'll be able to talk. We'll be able to talk about that hopefully next few weeks about where I was, what I did, the injustice of the California penal system.
The injustice.
If it was only documented, that would have been great. So anyhow, gentlemen, let's jump into a couple topics. A lot of stuff has been happening just in the last couple weeks. There are some cool product releases that I think maybe would make for us to revisit some stuff. I ordered, and I have over here, I got the Oculus Go.
Oh, what's the Go? I'm not familiar with this.
Oh, well, hold on, Brian.
For those guys who don't know, Justin and I, big supporters of the HTC Vive. Justin, did you get that Beat Saber in your life?
No, we haven't tried it yet.
Oh, so good.
We definitely need to. I know. I'm shocked that Ashley hasn't. I don't know if she knows about it. Maybe I should set it up for her because she's more of the rhythm
game than I am. So Oculus Go, it is the first wave. We've talked about this before about a year or so ago about how we're starting to get a new wave. There would be a new wave of microprocessors coming out specifically geared towards VR. And in particular, lowering the cost of it and allowing you to do completely standalone. So the Go is sort of the first wave of the real standalone VR units. It starts at $199. This is a completely self-contained. It's not a thing you put your phone into. It's already got a display and a computer system inside of there, right? The resolution on it, all that is, I would say, it's actually better than the first Oculus developer division I had. Okay. Now it's got a pretty good display. You know, you charge it up. It's got this controller here. Now what this does not have is it's not 6 degrees of freedom, meaning if you haven't tried VR, and that's the thing that's the hard thing to sort of get across to people is a lot of people that you put the cell phone VR thing, you put your phone in there and you look around, which is like a ViewMaster that lets you turn your head. That's cool. But once you have what's called 6 degrees of freedom, which means that you don't just turn like here.
That's X, Y, Z axis plus pitch, yaw, and roll, right? Forward, backwards.
Yeah, and what that means is like there's a Stranger Things game or experience that you can play with this, right? And in it, you're sitting on a couch, right? And you're looking around and crazy things happen. And next to you is a chair. Now with this, you look over and you see the chair. You can move your head all around. That chair ain't going out of the way. With 6 degrees of freedom, which is, I'll explain in a second, when that's coming out, you can move your head over and now you can see around the chair. You can see around. Or, if it has a larger sense, you're able to walk around. This doesn't have that. This is just spin your head around, look at stuff. It's cool. It's like having a super big monitor to play with stuff. And also, it's only $199.
Do you feel taken out of the experience when you positionally move your head and it doesn't track, or do you not really? Is there enough of an experience that you still lose yourself in the place?
I think there's a couple. There were a couple experiences that I thought were great, like the Stranger Things experience. You're just watching a really immersive movie, you know.
Yeah.
Versus being there, you know, when you guys first did the Vive, I bet you have visceral memories of the first things you played there, and those felt like real places to you.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. In fact, as we've talked about on some of the other podcasts, I'm trying to find a property to move our operations and have like a real grown up business. And so the real estate agent had like 5 different properties, and he was like, well, can we meet and we can, you know, look at these on a laptop? I was like, well, why don't you come over to my place? And using Google Earth, I quote unquote went to all of them. And it was astonishing how quickly we didn't have to travel. We didn't have to go there. Using the actual data from Google Earth, I was able to get a simulacrum of what it would look like at sunset, sunrise, all that stuff. It'd be like, yes, definitely this on the list, definitely this one off the list. And, you know, now that I'm, you know, you make yourself a 50-foot tall giant and you're like, well, it seems like this, you know, concrete factory is right in your backyard. That doesn't look
if good. I become Ant-Man, this could be a problem.
Exactly, right? that sense of place is what I'm getting at, is so authentic in a good Vive experience. How close does that bring you to that kind of experience?
So no, it doesn't. It's like the first, you know, without it, it doesn't bring you quite there. It's fun. It's a cool thing to look at media and to do sort of stuff. Big problem is just the content. Like, I think there probably could be some great games and stuff. They're showing Bryce is showing the browser, actually using a web browser, and it's actually kind of fun. And the controller is pretty good for a $199 device. It's pretty amazing. I think it's pretty fantastic what it does. That being said, I ordered another device, which I don't know when I'm going to get. This was the Oculus platform and Oculus Go, which is basically just streamlining the phone sort of stuff. The next thing coming out is from Google has their Project Daydream, which is their version of sort of the mobile AI or mobile VR system stuff. I just ordered the Lenovo Mirage Solo. Wonderful name, guys. The Lenovo Mirage Solo, which is a $400 one that has 6 degrees of freedom and completely standalone.
Huh.
Which that's like Vive, a really good Oculus level. I mean, again, those things probably have a higher resolution than these things do. But now we're at the $400, the sub $500 standalone VR thing. And so the Mirage Solo has the 6 degree of freedom sort of thing. The problem there is, and it has room sensing. So it is just 2 cameras. You don't need to put anything on the walls, nothing around you. It's using Google's system for using the 2 cameras on the front to track what's around you. By all accounts, they say the hardware's great. The problem with all these systems, there's just no software. There's just nothing to do with them.
Outside of like a couple of tech demos and that's it.
Well, yeah, look, yeah, a couple games, everything though. Is either super short, fairly limited, or the open-ended stuff people want to do. Like VR chat kind of had a moment that people wanted to be a part of it. But like at a certain point, as soon as that wave passes and all the Uganda Knuckles shows up, then you're out. It's done. And that's the problem with all the VR stuff, is that everybody either wants to do stuff that looks blow your mind out awesome, right? Or you come up with these open-ended kind of games where you can play against other people, but no one's really done the like, let me spend 4 hours on a journey, even if it doesn't look as good. Like if it's not, you can see past every hill and vista that it's maybe a sparer game, but at least you can connect to the process.
So in the chat, Trey Warren was pointing out that the Oculus Go would be a perfect air flight device. Like if you're sitting in your cross-country flight, you can lose yourself. Do the equivalent of tell your neighbor to bug off and don't bother you because you're not here.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what, that's kind of a pretty good way to do it without telling them, is to put on a gigantic, you know, cinder block on your face.
and then throw on some giant headphones. And so, like, nothing says leave me alone louder than that, right?
Yeah, I bought it.
Just get a monogram GFY.
Yeah, I bought it because I thought was thinking, you know, I may have been on a lot of airplanes recently, whatever, but I may have had great video screens in the accommodations I was in, but that's neither here nor there. But anyhow, the point is, I bought it with the point thinking about that might be kind of cool because like they have things like Netflix built in and stuff, but it's streaming, so it's not like download, but you can use Plex and other systems there. There are ways to put content on there and do that. And I'll tell you what's cool about the Go. One is you can do that, and actually watching videos on there is kind of cool. And you know, it's funny, like the problem is like the default video players for this, they put you in like a movie theater or like your living room, and you see a screen and there's a rug and there's this, and it's like the 1995 website where there's a calendar and a clock and a pen, you know, to write me a letter, where you're like, this is stupid. You know, it's like, it's just like, we'll put this there and we'll make it look like a movie theater. You're in this empty, abandoned movie theater.
It's just like that Mitchell and Webb sketch of like the first television broadcasts where they're just like awkwardly sitting in front of the camera. And it's like, just like a radio thing where they're like describing everything that they're doing.
So I would say that's the problem. It's a software problem from a hardware point of view. I mean, I got the $250 one, but it has it's comfortable enough for something that's big on your face. I had it too tight, so every time I took it off, it looked like I had like, you know, a reverse sunburn around my face.
Looks like you just got back off the slopes.
Well, I was a ninja sunbathing, you know, just this area here, you know, just my eyes were red.
That's funny.
It has built-in speakers, right? So when you put this thing on, the sound is really good. And you know, so you can use, if you're by yourself, it's fine. You don't need to put in, you know, plug in earphones. But the built-in speakers on this, I was very impressed with. So the quality of this, the quality of the build, you know, I was very, very, very impressed with the hardware part of this. And I was thinking like, man, if Nintendo came out with this and it was $299 and they had, you know, a bunch of Nintendo kind of experiences and stuff, we would be losing it over it. But it's that software ecosystem. It's just not.
Yeah. Some pushes, I think the NBA announced that they'd be doing like one or two games a week where you would have it be four, stuff like that. But even then, it's like I can't see that replacing like, oh, I just want to watch a game. Like I'd have to have like a reason to do it. If it was like, you know, somebody that I really wanted to hang out with and it's like, hey, here's a cool interactive experience where you get to experience this with somebody live and interact with them, then that might be one thing. But as it is now, it's just, man, it is so frustrating because the specs are there, but the follow through just isn't.
Yeah, I didn't realize the Go and the Rift had separate app libraries.
Yeah, because remember the Go is based upon sort of like what was sort of the cell phone kind of thing. And then the Rift and like the Vive, they're a bit more processor intensive.
So it functions without any kind of internet connection?
I mean, you set it up on the internet, but then
But then it's got stuff downloaded and standalone, and you can
download it. You can
do it while you're driving.
Yeah, you can download stuff to it and do that. And then the Mirage, which I'll be getting hopefully in a week or so, be able to talk about that. That actually lets you plug in SD cards and store stuff onto it and all that. And
that's good.
For a $400 device. Yeah, and the quality on this, it's like it's screen door effect, but this is way better than, you know, I had the first Oculus Developer Edition, and this is way better than that, you know.
So enthusiastic thumbs up, provisional thumbs up, sideways thumbs.
I would say that if you're curious about VR and you want to play around, but you understand that the inherent limitation that it does not have that full 6 degrees of freedom, and you want to play with it, whatever, I would say, yeah, play with it. You know, get it, play with it. If you want, I'm going to wait for the Lenovo Mirage to play with that. But expect the fact that you're going to get it. It might be cool. There might be a couple new things. And then there's nothing for you to do with it until people start developing for it. I've bought a lot of VR stuff and cameras and stuff and played with this sort of stuff. Like I said, I mean, I bought first Oculus, the first developer, the DK2, played with it, played with development environments with it, felt very disappointed in what they were doing on sort of the software and the development side of it, and thought that their focus was not where I wanted it to be and sort of just walked away from it. I think this is exciting. I'll say this is exciting because a year and a half from now, you're going to buy a $200 headset that'll have room sensing, room tracking. You know, that price will hit. If you can put this thing out for $200, you're not that far away from being able to put a camera system in there and giving you really good room sensing and tracking. And then I think games are going to get really, really, really cool. You know, you guys have done the Star Wars Void experience?
I have not. Justin has.
Did. I did it a week ago, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, in Vegas. Yeah, no, I did the Secrets of the Empire Void experience. I was impressed. They had just set it up. It's the new one in the Venetian.
So this is like a standalone kiosk, like an arcade, basically. You'd find these like at the mall or something.
So no, it actually is like a room. There's like several kind of areas that you walk both to get
a
your
lobby,
briefing.
You go into a briefing room. You go into another. The one in like Orlando. You go into another room. You watch a video screen. They explain to you what's going to go on. Yeah. Then you go into. When you play the game, Brian, like they actually have like rooms you walk through and doorways and stuff and things you stand in, places you sit.
Do you have to wear a backpack with the computer in it?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
But it works. I mean, you're supposed to be a stormtrooper, so you feel kind of body armor whenever you're hit. You feel
a thump.
Pressure. Like it all works together. Technically, my hands didn't always track.
Yep.
So that was slightly disappointing. It was better when I was you get a gun. It tracked a lot better when you had a gun in your hand. But other than that, like there were like little things that I was slightly disappointed on. But there's a moment where, spoiler alert, it's a Star Wars thing. So guess what happens? Star Wars characters show up, and there was a Star Wars character that showed up, and my butt. Definitely puckered. Like, I was scared that I was going to die at the hands of a famous Star Wars character. Won't tell you who it is, but it's a Star Wars, very mean Star Wars character.
Everyone knows it's a Yoda.
So, let me just give you an exasperated sigh that sounds like this.
Yep, Max Rebo.
I've done the Ghostbusters one, and I've done the Star Wars one for Void, and... Yeah, both were like, I'm like, fine. The equipment is huge and unwieldy, and it's a Vive. It's like, it's portable Vive. It's like, that's what it is. And also, I would say that I think the display on this thing is actually better than the one that they had in the Void. I was really kind of the display I was a little bit disappointed in. I looked at this. I'm like, it's like a 20-minute experience. It's 20 minutes and you're done. And it's like, you know, I want that experience. Now, what's cool is like this has integrated into a lot of social stuff. So you can connect, like go to do things with rooms and like, hey, guys, let's go to this Oculus room and go watch this sort of thing and be there together. It's got a microphone. It's got this stuff. There is so much potential now for these things. You know, like I'm excited about once this is in the hands of developers and people start playing with this. And also with the six, you know, like the next, the Mirage Solo, the Daydream platform with the 6 degrees of freedom, you could start making full on Vive like stuff with this. You could start doing a lot more cooler kinds of things. And that's just freaking weird. We're watching floating heads. it's this desire to, like they create, like you create an avatar, and your avatar is wearing VR goggles.
I mean, that's an option. Or are all of them? They're all wearing all VR
the glasses, or like VR goggles.
There's masks and stuff.
My guess
everyone's
is
like a dicky, like because you kind of see a little bit of their chest too.
My guess is that trying to render eyes triggers the uncanny valley at this point. And so,
yeah, then go for simpler avatars, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Go for coal black. Eyes, so everybody looks like they've become possessed.
Rec Room sort of does it with like
with cartoon eyes, just dots,
emoticon almost.
I mean, we've seen emojis and our Wii characters and we whatever those were called. Like, I don't know. I mean, I I'm excited because it's like this is the starting point. Like, and now we're at that. Hey, next year it's like the first phones, you know, the first, you know, technical phones. And then you know, we know Apple's spending tons of money on this, and then as we start getting to 4K and 8K displays, and but it's just the hardware's fast getting there. The hardware's now where we kind of thought it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, you know? I think that's the thing, and the price point is the price point is doable, at least to jump in. The only problem is, again, and this is something that we've said even as big Vive fans, is like, man, I would love if 2-3 times a year I could get really excited about a new game, you know, and unfortunately that has just kind of not panned out.
Yeah. But
so I can go back and do the old stuff. But yeah, listen, I think that the future is there. There is a future there at the very least.
Yeah. I'm thrilled that they hit the $200 price point on a VR headset. That's as good as anything that came out 3 years ago.
You know,
and that we're now in the acceleration curve. And
are we 3 years into? I guess we are. Yeah, we're 3 years into VR 2.0.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, between Oculus and Vive, crazy.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? We're more than 3 years into
Weird Things and us being loud, live, and independent. Thanks to all of our fabulous bosses over at Patreon.com/Weird Things. Join the revolution. The revolution against what? Normalcy. Normalcy? Boring. You lived it your whole life. Get done with it. Join the weird revolution. Head on over, become a boss at patreon.com/weirdthings. It's not a complicated system. The system is you listen to our shows, you like them, you give us money, so we keep doing them. I think that's a fair transaction, sirs and madams. You're welcome.
Yeah, man. patreon.com/weirdthings. Head on over there right now and make sure that we keep doing this show, because if you don't pay us, we'll stop.
that's how it works. Our time is worth money, and we carve out hours and hours to do this for you. And if we stop being paid,
I don't know that, like, if we stop, that the show has to stop. Because, man, I want to do like two AI machine learning stories, if I may.
Yeah. And replace two of the hosts. You're saying you want to replace the two of the hosts with AI machine learning and bots?
I also, if you guys wouldn't mind, I do have another kind of larger question that I would like to pose to you guys. So, Andrew, would you want me to do that after or before the machine learning? What do you think?
Now that you brought it up, Justin, it's just, you just got to go with it. You just got to rip that band-aid off.
If you'd like, I could simulate what it'll be like to have machine learning Brian and Justin on for you, Andrew. Would that be good? I worked out. my Jeep is nice. I like games.
Personal best. Personal best.
Many kids. Many kids.
Josie Penny Bonnie. Yeah. Penny Josie Bonnie.
My back hurts. My back's feeling better.
Wrestling, yay.
Wrestling. Opinion that's opposite yours.
Space elevators.
All right, here. Let me just ask, and we can spend as little or as much time on this as we want. But there's something that I've noticed in popular culture that there, as Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos specifically, I think in general, there's kind of a popular backlash toward kind of Silicon Valley companies. But I saw a story today that made its way through my Twitter feed that was like a BuzzFeed think piece about how Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos are so focused on space, but they dare not touch like global inequality, like wealth inequality, and compared Bill Gates's foundation to how they are spending their money and some other Silicon Valley famous philanthropists to how they've spent their money compared to specifically Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. And I don't think that we necessarily need to debate that think piece specifically, but there is just this larger sort of like I backlash against those two. I see it in mainstream people that aren't really like science focused. There is just this brewing backlash to those two specifically. And I'm just curious from both of you, where do you guys think that comes from? Because I have a few theories, but I figure we talk enough about the two of them like on this show that I think it would be an interesting topic of conversation.
And Andrew?
I think it comes from every time I read a piece like this, if I were to have Frankenstein sum up that person's point of view, it's business bad, government good, charity good. And it comes from, what's that?
Oh, I was going to offer a counterpoint. I think all of it comes from a good place. What they're really saying, if you distill it down, is I am deeply bothered that some people are doing so much better than other people. And it is hard for me as the author of this BuzzFeed think piece to imagine someone spending so much money to go to space when if I had that money, I would spend it a different way.
Yeah, Brian, I agree that there is this they have this idea of how to make the world better, but they don't know how you make the world better. That's my point, is that Elon Musk starts Tesla, an electric car company, because Elon Musk says, controversially on one hand, he says, you know, we might have the right amount of CO2 right now because it helps things. A little bit of CO2 is good. Heads exploded when he said that, but he's like, but we don't want to continue that. We don't want to continue this experiment, put too much CO2 and destroy, you know, make the way we like things, you know. And he's very much like, yeah, we don't want to keep using, you know, we don't want to keep using CO2 producing fuels thing forever. That's why he wants to electrify electric cars, Tesla energy, all this sort of stuff, right? And I largely agree with that. I think it's great. Like I'm not an alarmist, but I'm also like, yeah, I don't want us to be using like diesel generators and coal 80 years from now. I think that would be kind of a failure of imagination if we do that. So he has created this company that has now created more electric cars, put more electric cars on the streets of America and around the world than anybody else, right? Number one selling like mid-sized sedan now is like the Model 3. Okay. This is a guy who's done enormous amounts to sort of move us away from fossil fuel cars to electric cars. And again, we can have a debate over the practicality of that. But if you say, hey, decarbonization is good, and where's the power coming from? Nuclear, you know, power plants. If it's nuclear, it's great. Point is, getting cars to be electric means it's faster towards getting to decarbonization. Now, that's great. But because it's a business, this writer doesn't see it as that. This writer says, wow, it's a business. He's doing it for money. Great. It makes it even better idea because then it means it's sustainable. It pays for itself. It does that. You know, Jeff Bezos sees that once we're able to go into space and do all sorts of amazing research, it'll apply back to Earth. He sees these guys have a much bigger vision of what these technologies mean for humanity. And when people talk about wealth inequality, it's they fall into that trap of thinking, well, these people are poor because this person's rich. It's like, maybe in some countries, in some situations, but in a market system, a market that, it's no, these people are poor because we're not doing enough to help them unleash their potential. Not because they need to be treated like cattle. It's because you need to give them better access to education and tools because, you know, I have friends in India. You know, a friend in India gets paid next to nothing. You bring that same person here and put them into our system, suddenly they're worth 10 times more. It's the same person. It's the same knowledge. But we say, no, this person has value. This person doesn't, you know, and you can do things to charitably to help education. Absolutely, I'm all for these sorts of things. But I don't look at other, you know, it's the, I don't treat, there are people who think that every new mouth is just another mouth to feed. Or you say, no, this person has potential. In the right environment, we can unleash that.
So it's just to kind of, and tell me if I'm mischaracterizing, but to put kind of a bow that there are just fundamental ways of looking at the world that are driving these kinds of assumptions and backlash.
Yeah. Somebody says, you know, I look at Bezos and oh, he has a ton of money. I'm like, great. I hope he starts more companies and hires other people. Other people goes, he has a ton of money. He should give it away. Well, you give it away once and it doesn't exist. But if he can create more companies and more industries, then we do that. And there are inequalities. There's, you know, one of the biggest problems we have is poverty, the way we treat people who are poor, the way we have things that make it harder for them to get access to education. You know, if you're a single mom and you're like, well, go to college. And it's like, well, who's going to raise my kid? And there are things that I think we can do to improve the quality of that. But just saying, it's like, I hate like, you know, the whole idea when we're like, we should do like, you know, minimum basic income and stuff. I'm like, maybe, but that's like the worst. That's the last idea I want to try.
There's a we've talked about it before, but in that David Wong article, Six Harsh Truths That'll Make You a Better Person, at the end, he talks a bit about why people offer nasty comments and act like trolls. And he says, whatever it is they say, it all boils down to this, quote, stop creating. You're doing things, you're making a thing different than I would have made a thing, and the attention you're getting is making me uncomfortable. And once I read those words, it truly did. It was like a magic lens that changed every nasty comment that we got. You know, like we got a whole bunch of, you know, we made a PC on the Modern Rogue channel. And so anybody who has ever built a PC, guess what? Turns out there's opinions among the tech literate, right? And so everybody was doing like, you know, LOL cringe, you know, these guys are dumb. I would have done it differently. And none of them bothered me because I saw the truth of what they were saying. And what they were saying was, stop creating the attention you're getting. You did it different than I would have done it, and it's making me uncomfortable. And when I hear about these articles, I would have gotten bent out of shape. I'd be like, hey, man, I plan to be rich someday, and I don't want anyone telling me how to spend my money. Now, when I even just hearing it, and I haven't read the Think piece, Justin, but when you described it, all I heard was, I am an author, and if I had Elon Musk's money, I would spend it differently than Elon Musk did. And that's fine. That's a fine sentiment. That's great that you would do that. Good on you.
Well, I think inherent is this idea, and it is certainly an extrapolation of where there is modern criticism to kind of like the new titans of industry in Silicon Valley, that we are creating these companies that have tremendous explosive wealth and these dynamic kind of personalities that are purposely reacting different than some of the old people who have created gigantic companies and are trying to do different things. And for every time that they're like, you know, even like exactly like what we've all talked about, that like Elon Musk is like, hey, here are my pursuits because I believe it's going to make the world better. We should have electric cars, better capacity batteries, and we should be able to get off Earth, because fundamentally me as a very smart guy sees these as worthwhile pursuits that are going to benefit humanity. And the argument against it, if you're going to look at it in the most cynical way, is like, sure, typical Silicon Valley thinking. These guys want to think 9 steps ahead when the problem right in front of them is somebody's hungry. Why don't you figure out how to feed that person?
The bringing up Bill Gates was interesting because over a decade ago, he was criticized because he hadn't started charitable contributions, right? He was criticized because he's worth billions of dollars. He wasn't the richest, but his wealth was accumulating. He got criticized because he's, why isn't he doing anything with it? Bill Gates at the time was studying up on epidemics, was studying up on virology. He was looking, he says, I've got a massive amount of wealth. What do I need to do with it? And there's this dumb idea that the thing you need to do is just write checks to charities. I got news for you. Been inside the nonprofit world and different aspects of it. It is sometimes the worst way to solve a problem because charities exist to support themselves. But for our podcast listeners, Justin and Brian are nodding their heads vigorously. Okay.
Hey, look. They're called nonprofits because a lot of the people that work at them wouldn't know how to fucking balance a budget.
There's things like charitable navigators. Start looking at the salary levels of a lot of the people who run these nonprofits, okay? And they're making more than executives of big Fortune 500 companies. You find out, you look at some charities are good, but you look at some of your favorite charities and what you're contributing to and what it goes towards, you will want to throw up because you realize what for every dollar you spend, for how much are you really doing? Charities are a business that exists to convince you that by giving them money, and there are right. some fantastic charities.
The way economicists or as I call them, economists, as economists would put it, is they have perverse incentives. They have the misalignment of incentives. You would think that their goal is to solve the charity, but that's the one thing that would instantly put their charity out of business. And so instead, you know, there are incentives to make sure that you do highly visual things. You make the customer feel very good because the customer is really purchasing the feeling of having done social good, not necessarily having solved the problem.
I've worked with foundations that we're trying to go for, like try to do things, raising money to solve orphan diseases and stuff, right? And they'd raise a bunch of money because, you know, there's a condition that affects only a few thousand children. They'd raise a bunch of money and they go to some hospital, they go to like a pretty prominent researcher, some hospitals working this. They buy them a bunch of lab equipment and it became just another project for them. You know, it became just another project for them versus if you wanted to be aggressive and use that money for it, you'd go to some grad student or some, you know, just somebody who just got their postdoc somewhere who's not the same level that this. You spend the time and you headhunt, you found somebody else like this and say, hey, what would you do with $500,000 versus funding this lab that's overfunded or funded? It is horrific what I have seen in many cases where money is going to, and you have funder, you have the people who do the donor management. And we've all have experience, I think, with that, with friends and family and this sort of stuff. And you see what goes on there. And the answer, like, they should give it away. Bill Gates spent years figuring out what to do. It. Ultimately, he created the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is to do that, which has problems. But it's probably one of the best examples out of a lot of them so far. But I think they're getting some institutional cruft. When Warren Buffett decided that he wanted to give away his fortune, what did Warren Buffett say? I'm going to go to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and give them my money because everybody else is spending it stupid. And if you want – I want Elon Musk just to write checks for all these things. Great for your friends who work for nonprofits. Is that going to solve the problem? Building another gigafactory is probably going to solve these problems.
Can I offer a counterpoint to this discussion?
No, Brian. Not
this is not the counterpoint things show. No, go ahead.
Because we've talked about this in various places. Not us, but I have talked about this with other people, especially in the chat room, in other places online. And I think – Part of it is, yes, it's very weird to say, hey, you have a lot of money, give it to X, Y, or Z. But I think a lot of where the frustration comes out of is, especially in the case of Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, is that their own houses are not exactly in order. You know, the stories of Amazon workers who are not allowed to take restroom breaks and are not hydrating themselves because they will get dinged for work and their time if they go to a restroom a quarter mile away, the safety issues in Tesla factories, any number of things that in their own houses that they should be addressing. And there was very recently the article, I think part of the article that probably spawned this BuzzFeed one was an interview with Jeff Bezos talking about, well, you know, I funding a space travel program because that is, I have so much money coming in. That's how I can burn $1 billion a year. And it's like, well, what about treating the people that you're responsible for maybe a little better? Like, I the charity stuff is – I'm sure there are people who are saying that. But Bryce, I also think that there's a more middle space here.
100% on those things. And like, yeah, there that is Amazon for – I love Amazon. I have a great relationship with Amazon. I'm also an Amazon published author. Those other things need to be talked about. We need to know. But, I mean, part of what makes Amazon work is how they're able to lower their profits, whatever. They need to talk about. And the same with the Tesla factories. I'm a Tesla shareholder, and I'm concerned about some of these stories. But also – I'm going to defend Tesla for a point. There is a massive effort to unionize Tesla. And a lot of these stories you find, you hear about that, you're like, where does this come from? And then they turn out to be a little bit spurious because you find out that they're coming from factories that people so far rejected unionization. But I do think big companies have these issues. I do think, like, yeah, Amazon cuts its costs. It's not known for its perks. It's not for this. I would not want to work in a fulfillment center. You know, they talk about famously, like, how they like, oh, we have a jobs retraining program. If people want to learn and go get another job, it's because they don't want you working in a fulfillment center past 5 or 6 years, because then you become more expensive and less efficient. And it's a reality of economics. And so, as far as how could you take – but also there's – remember, there's the corporate profit and then there's the personal profit. So there's the money that's in the company versus what somebody takes out of that. Mm-hmm. I think all of these are absolutely viable. And I think that build a healthy company that treats its employees well, build a healthy company that makes a healthy profit and treats its employees and treats its customers well. You start there, you can change the world. Like, Amazon's changed my life for the better. You know, Walmart's done a lot more for me. You know, when, you know, a struggling writer living in Florida, whatever, to be able to go to Walmart and buy food gave me a little more money, you know, every month.
I think about it a little bit. There's an example. I'm going to adapt an example that's in one of the Robert Kiyosaki books where he's talking about building systems versus taking direct action. In his, he's talking about making money. But let's think about it in terms of doing good. So let's say there's a lake and there's a village, and everybody in the village is right this moment definitely dehydrating to death. Like, they need water very, very badly. They're dying in front of you. And there are two paths to take. There's the path where you run down and grab a bucket and run up and deliver it to them. And that will feel right. And it will definitely do good. And you will get to see the good. And then there's the path of looking at that, nodding, turning your back on it, walking back, finding investors, building a system, hiring engineers, you know, and meanwhile, all these people just dying of thirst, and you're ignoring them while you try to build a system. And then a year later, there's a pipeline and everybody has water. And I think that the BuzzFeed article writer is somebody who says, how can you not grab a bucket and help? And I think the Elon Musk say, because I'm trying to save everyone. And it's up to each of us to decide, you know, who's right and who's wrong in that situation. But I think that it's just a matter of solving different problems differently with different people.
And there's another thing too I taught a program in high school. This is actually how I met Justin, that was underwritten by Johnny Carson. Okay. Johnny Carson, celebrity entertainer. There was no that he did so much stuff. There was no press releases for it. He funded parks, funded this. I know an internet billionaire who's funded poison control centers. His name's not on a single one of them. And people don't know that he does this because the last thing he really wants to do is get attention for this. I know Elon Musk has actually done a lot more, and I can't get into too much, but I know Elon Musk has done a lot more for really important critical causes in education, things in South Africa and other places like this. He's actually done a lot. Is he taking his titanic fortune to this? No, because his goal is to take that. If Bill Gates took his $20 billion fortune back in 1995 or 1996 and said, I'm giving it all away, we would not have had the global impact that we have now with what Bill Gates is able to do.
And by the way, there's a natural experiment of that, because that is what Ted Turner did. He donated $1 billion to the United Nations, and it was done with love in his heart and because he wanted to help the world. And I think that $1 billion, seeing what the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation does with accountability and all that, might have been better spent somewhere else.
Yeah. And it is done with out of that. And I think that I actually, the one of the guys, people I know, billionaire who funded poison control centers and did some really cool, some stuff that you've seen that some people know about, but they don't know who did it. This is a guy that did that. But anyhow, I asked him, like, what's his advice? This is when I was way younger. I said, hey, what advice would you give me if I wanted to try to change things and do things better? He's like, make money. He says, become successful. He says, make money when you're young. Don't spend it. If you're spending all your time working at charitable organizations or doing this sort of stuff, you're not going to be effective. If you can accumulate a lot of money and expertise and all that, later on in life, you go do this, you'll be far more effective. And I think that Jeff Bezos is now the richest man in the world. He does not plan to turn all of that over to his kids. When Jeff Bezos is able to, and that's part of it too, is like, oh, you should give this away. They're building companies. They don't have time right now to focus on how to smartly, intelligently give away their money. Bill Gates retired. Then he and his wife got together and said, how do we handle this now? Because if we do it wrong, they've watched so many fortunes get wasted and squandered, mind you, because a rich person did not know what to do and just said, I'm going to write a check for $1 billion here, here, and here. And great, they got another college got another wing or another building, another college that it's already extremely well funded and endowed that does not need your money got to do this. Instead of strategic, Bill Gates said strategically, I want to combat AIDS in Africa. And he saved millions of lives. Because he took the time, figured out what he wanted to do. He has saved millions of lives and now fighting malaria. I mean,
well, and plus also.
And by the way, I met somebody that's now working with Zuckerberg's and his wife's charity. And this is like their goal is over the next 20 years, they want to have that track record. They want to have that Bill and Melinda Gates track record of spending money wisely for maximum effect. And if there's one central kind of issue that I would have on that particular think piece and in general is for all the like tut-tutting of, yeah, but why not this? There's very rarely an effective drawing a circle around the problem. If it's like, hey, why are people hungry? Like, why is there global poverty? Why is there such high homelessness even in places where there's tremendous wealth and relatively abundant opportunity? It's very rarely that of like, you should be focusing on this thing because with this amount of money or this amount of technology or this amount of attention, something could be done. It's just people are hungry. Solve it. You're the, I mean, yeah, although I guess that's the issue for them is like, hey, look, you want to solve space travel, you know, that's not uncomplicated. Why can't you solve this problem? Why can't you solve global hunger? Why can't you solve wealth inequality?
When and it kind of comes down to, like, and we're obviously kind of very similar, like-minded. When we look at an impoverished city, I would say the three of us aren't looking there going, man, if only Bill Gates would open up his checkbook and pay to buy every house there. We look at an impoverished city and we're like, man, they've got really bad leaders. You know, they've probably got a bad justice system. They've got a lot of problems there. Their education system probably really sucks as far as access to it. It's not a lack of money. It's a lack of bad leadership. But if people think, no, it's leadership's fine, and, you know, you put enough bureaucrats and leaders there, it's going to be fixed. It's like, no, that's actually, we found that's the opposite. You know, more inefficiency wreaks even greater inefficiencies and stuff. But we look at it that way. If you look at it from the point of view like, oh, well, they're poor because this guy over here has money, it's like, well, that's a fundamental difference. I have a difference of opinion of where wealth comes from. Wealth is generated. You know, you can redistribute it until there's nothing there, or you figure out how to create it. You take Detroit, you know, I would rather we improve the access to education and stuff for people in Detroit and help them live up to their human potential, like I've been able to do, then instead, like, so sorry, we're just gonna have to give you money because there's nothing, you have no value. I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. See, it's, yeah, we're like, yeah, that's how we see it.
Was that an answer to your question, Justin?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think this is kind of a larger thing because obviously we are very future focused on this show. We are very bleeding edge. This is the new stuff that is happening, and we tend to, I think, you know, and I think it's serving the show, but we tend to, you know, minimize general blowback toward people like Elon Musk, so we can focus the time on, hey, here are the satellites that are going up. Here is the timeline for when we are going to get this. Like, rapidly over the course of this show, we have watched the impossible become possible. There's a reason why we keep going back to the space elevator thing, because that was an actual argument that we had that now has proven to be kind of a comically obsolete idea as the prices on this have come down just in the length of this show. If you're just following this week by week, this is what's happened. And so we feel that, all right, we are, if the charge is, you guys are focusing nine steps ahead, then I think we're guilty of that, because that's where we spend a lot of time on this show. But I do think that I've noticed more as the stature of both those guys specifically have gone up. And maybe, like, what Bryce said is there is this idea that the mythos of both Bezos and Musk has gotten so big that the natural inclination is to see, all right, is the cannon fodder the people who work in the factories? Like, are they treating these people well when they are putting untold wealth into these, you know, solving a problem that many might never see in their lifetime, the fruits of? So I know that we don't focus on that a lot, but it is something that I've noticed more and more, and beyond just beyond the kind of issues and the conversations that we're having, there just seems to be this growing, like, these guys roll their eyes. If not on the other end, that these are the true villains of our era, that they are mortgaging the present for the future, even at its most charitable.
Yeah, and I would say, I would posit or suggest that maybe if I'm reading the room correctly, some version of the official Weird Things counterargument would be, you know, it's easy to say, oh, spaceman doing space things, what's the point of that? The real point, of course, is 600 years from now, they'll look back and say, this is the man who solved the overpopulation problem. He saved all of humanity and got us off this rock. You know, that might not be much of an overstatement to make it. So you could make a very strong, compelling moral case that that the much bigger, pressing, important problem of us being stuck on one dumb petri dish that could get hit by a rock and get wiped out at any moment, we're getting off this rock.
Well, and The other part optically is that, you know, Bezos has gone from Point Dexter to a wig away from Hank Scorpio from the Simpsons, and Elon Musk is playing the role of eccentric crazy man billionaire as he talks about making cyborg dragons and revolutionizing the candy industry. So like that they lend themselves, I think, you know, whether they are intentionally doing it or not, to whenever there's I'm going to revolutionize the candy industry, the first thing that somebody wants to at reply is, yeah, but what about this problem in your factory? Or like, what about you know, for Bezos, like exactly what Bryce said, the like, oh, well, space is where I can spend my money. And then the first thing somebody wants to throw back, which I don't think is invalid, is, well, somebody, you know, pooped on the floor because you work them 12 hours in a fulfillment center. Fix that if you are looking for something to dump a ton of money into.
Yeah, I think these things are, you know, all the things Bryce brought up, these are things that, you know, worthy of talking about. And, you know, that my frustration comes from sometimes is that, like, and where I'm certainly guilty of being a super cheerleader, you know, everything's great, great, great. The other side, it's some of those criticisms, though, sometimes they're not that genuine. And that's a frustrating to me. Like, there's a story that just made the rounds everywhere in the last 2 days about NASA science. NASA says the new SpaceX rocket could be really dangerous, right? Okay, and because they talk about they use for the SpaceX for the Falcon rocket, they use this, they super cooled oxygen and fuel goes in there, so it actually they can fit more of it into a tank, and this is part of where they get a lot of their, you know, their power increases from it. So this article is everywhere. Some version of this thing is everywhere because, and that was, you know, the reason they had the explosion on the launch pad was because when you super cool oxygen like this, it's more likely to combust, and there can be problems for doing this. Okay. So it is absolutely, you know, a valid sort of thing to say, if we're going to start putting astronauts onto these craft, is it going to be safe? And I think that having that discussion is totally, totally, totally worth doing this. The problem I have is that if you pull up if Bryce, can you pull up that article again?
Yeah, I believe it's from the Washington Post here.
Yeah, and there's some people criticizing, well, Bezos owns the Washington Post, but I'm like, I don't think this was
bad, oh, no, you no, know. No.
Yeah, but scroll down.
Yeah, you don't think that you could track down that that Slack missive that he threw out there, like, hey, yeah, by the yeah, way, write something yeah, that bags on SpaceX.
So you've got what's happened is that, like, in one of the articles, one of the prominent people they talk about is, they say, a NASA, you know, person who is, you know, responsible for the Boeing contract. To SpaceX, you know, the Boeing contract, the International Space Station. And you're like, wait a second. You need to clearly state, hey, yeah, by the way, Boeing is part owner of ULA, and Boeing itself is a, you know, is spending a Boeing has a massive campaign right now. They launched it 2 weeks ago to trash SpaceX, to like what SpaceX can't do, whatever. They've been spending a bunch of money. They talk about the Boeing-built SLS, which I'm sorry, other people are building that too. And I don't really want credit for that. But Boeing's been spending a ton of money, millions of dollars now in a campaign to try to spread fear, uncertainty, and doubt. This article pops up all of a sudden, and one of the chief people speaking there is somebody who is working on a massive Boeing contract. And it doesn't negate the engineering questions that we have about this. It's not like, oh, but you're like, it's not – no attention's called to this. And I do think the Washington Post article, they should point out, hey, by the way, at the end, just FYI, you know, our primary owner is also his second other company is this. Not that I don't think the author has any is
disingenuous or anything.
And not at all in respect to that. But still, you should disclose that. And really, the fact that Boeing, a huge competitor of SpaceX, there's a guy who's working on a Boeing contract, is one of the people voicing this concern. It's like, write the article, but point that out.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I think ultimately there's the problem is that a lot of people, even those writing articles for the Washington Post, may not be as literate about those battle lines as they probably should be. Cause it's something that if you're not focused on it, then like it's something that's clear to us that here's a gigantic contractor and here's an upstart that's providing a more reliable service for cheaper and making tremendous generational changes to the technology, then you're going to see pushback in the way that you see for many government contracts.
But, yeah. So again, and with all these things, and back to what we were our discussion before, it's like, yeah, bring up, point out, hey, there are problems, factors, but like, you know, and say like, you know, maybe some of these things real, some of these things might be like, hey, there's another party here that has a vested interest in sowing discord and making you think it's worse than it is. Well, and it may be worse than we realize. I don't know, but I don't know what to think.
Let me ask you a question, and I'm going to avoid the term unfair, but do you think that it is reductive to immediately tie how an Amazon factory worker, a poor treatment of an Amazon factory worker, with the progress of Blue Origin? Or is it fair to say that these things are linked because Bezos is involved in both of them?
I think it's fair to link them. I think it's absolutely fair. I think it's fair to say, and you have somebody who has as much control as Jeff Bezos does, both over operationally, he has a tremendous amount of control over operationally of how Amazon functions, and he has tremendous control over Blue Origin, and he has a tremendous amount of personal wealth. I think it's absolutely fair to say, you know, to question those things. And my in answer might be like, yeah, but I'm okay, or like, don't work in that factory, whatever. That's my take on it and my response to it. But for somebody to say, hey, I think this is fair game, I agree. I think it's fair to say, hey, you're pursuing all these values, you claim to have these values, but there are people who are making a lot of these claims here, which maybe they're legit, you know. I mean, it kind of comes down to, sure.
Do you think that this kind of blowback has a chilling effect? Like, will we see less openness or discussion from people like maybe even the next Bezos and Musk, if they look at their reputations kind of taking a different turn and saying, well, you want to know what? Maybe if I'm not going to be Elon Musk, I'm not going to be talking about cybernetic dragons when we have a bad quarter for Tesla.
Well, what you want is, if there are legit problems in the factories and not just people upset they're not getting paid enough, they're legit problems, you want them to address those problems, you know? And so Elon Musk has been getting criticized about some of the factories, the Fremont factory in particular, about this and some conditions there. He's been criticized about this, and he has been forcefully out there like, listen, you know, he says his point of view is like, you know, we've looked into these things, all this. There's this effort by unions. If you look at this person who made these claims, they work for the unions trying to unionize us. They're trying to do this, blah, blah, blah. The unions are what killed the Mooney plant in Northern California, some would argue and whatnot. And he's got reasons to say why this is problematic. And that might be what killed Detroit, you know, some would say. But the point is, he's got a reason to be very, very anti-union. He'd rather say, let's compensate people well. But unions exist to support unions. You just got to remember that. Unions can serve they've served a very valuable part in American history. They've done very useful things, but they're a company into themselves. You look at what the top union leaders make as far as salaries. It is insane compared to what people say, oh, no CEO should make more than 10 times the average employee. Look at what some of these union leaders make, and it way outstrips whatever you think that is. So that being said, is Elon Musk has been very out there and outspoken when he says, no, we've looked at this. And some people say, yeah, but you didn't quite answer this question, or maybe you were evasive there. But if you can't handle the scrutiny, and if you have something to hide, then yeah, you would shrink away.
Yeah.
Ryan?
Sorry, what was the question?
Never mind.
I mean, is the question like put me in the captain's seat? I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, I understand where that comes from. I don't know that I have a solution, because the only solution is to, why don't everybody read all the books I've read? Then you'll think what I think. You know, I don't know.
Well, but I would say that, Brian, when you read an article, there is a question in the back of your head going, what is their agenda? What is their point of view? This is the information, but what is the purpose? You're a critical thinker, and you go like, what is the real purpose of this? Who is saying this? What's going on here? Okay. Even when you read stuff that you know, you read Reason and you go, yeah, this makes a point, but you're still going, yeah, but they have an agenda here. And I think that if more people had that voice in the back of their head going, okay, how would I take this? How would I, even though this conforms to everything I want to believe, how would I debunk this or take this apart? That's helpful. And I would say that's,
Sure. I don't know. I think usually the line's a little bit shorter. I think people tend to speak from the heart more often than they realize. And yes, it might be that there's a moneyed interest pushing things one way or the other. But I think, you know, it's weird. Reality is a story that we're all living our own version of, and none of us have it right, and we just all see things differently. So I think a lot of these pieces come from, they see parts of the story and they think, well, the parts that I'm seeing seem to line up with a story that I don't care for, and I'm going to call it out. And then, you know, of course, if they ever got the rest of the story, they would, by definition, end up feeling probably the way the people, the main actors in those stories do.
All right, so machine learning.
man, that was a side jag.
man, I'll save that for next week. Because we went way long on a discussion.
Dude, yep, we're already over
an
hour.
Not only our audience, but our host tuned out of. So let's move right into, gosh, what's this thing we do?
Oh, is it a little thing called Jenny Quinn?
It is very far down in my inbox where this week happens. Hold on. Yeah.
It's been a hot minute.
All right. Well, one more time, Justin. You got this. You got this.
Johnny Quest!
Easily on
Johnny Quest!
Ladies and gentlemen, the fight you've been waiting for.
Here we go. Here we go.
We have some challengers. The top door opens up and a school bus drives through. I give you one monkey army.
It looks like medieval knights.
There is a large, furry, adorable sloth.
Oh, he outdid himself this week. Who is it that sends those in?
Steven. He's Crescent Isle on YouTube. Thank you so much, Steven.
Oh my God, that's great.
So we are now in the middle of the most epic battle in Bryce Vegas. Justin and Brian had gone there on a secret mission to deliver a nuclear payload with what they believe was replicant Bryce into kill
and
Bryce.
And replace.
Replace
yeah,
Bryce.
Dave. Evil Bryce.
To Dave. Yeah. We're going to Dave his ass.
Yeah.
With the promise that if they do this, the secret committee is going to let them finish this journey and complete things. But before they get to fight Bryce, the next thing you know, curtains open up, doors pull up, and they're confronted with all of their past victims, we'll say.
Yeah, we got through it. Look, it was challenging. It was rough. We did what had to be done, and finally, the epic battle, it's us versus Evil Bryce.
So,
in the middle of an arena, in front of the whole crowd, the door just opened. In fact, I reached into my back pocket.
Did we dispatch the kids and the sloth? And
you know what? That's last episode talk. Go listen to last episode. All we know is I just definitely remember it's just us and Bryce.
So you've dispatched all of your enemies and all the people you tried to help left and right. And now Bryce enters the arena.
Oh man, I rev my chainsaw arm. I reach into my back pocket to feel around if I have some 3-in-1 oil to go ahead and get everything lubed up so I can just I want everything running
right,
perfect.
Right.
Rev it
down for a second.
Bryce is doing a pose down, by the way. He's ripped, totally yeah. ripped. He's doing a pose down for the audience, you know. And just flexing.
Man, Bryce is ripped.
I know. Okay, look. Would you stop? You know, like, this is a point of contention.
Or something.
He'll be ripped asunder when old Thermocles tears him apart.
That's good.
We want to try and pull a. How about we use our strongest muscle of all? The brain to outfox him.
Okay.
Hold on, yeah. You guys have spent this whole arc killing everything in your path indiscriminately.
And now, you know what? Yeah. Thank you, Ghost of Bryce. While you're posing, I'm glad you did send us that telepathic thought. that would be a good change of pace for us, wouldn't it?
I mean, what would we try to like get in his brain or? Oh, wait, hold on. I got it.
Yeah.
Just go with me.
Okay. I back your play. Right. I finish lubing up my chainsaw arm, and I rev it 3 more times.
I say, Bryce, before we fight. Oh, my God. Sorry. for whatever reason.
It's a very slashable face right now. I'm just having a
Before we fight, I got one thing to tell you.
he's doing the Hulkamania motion.
Throughout all this apocalyptic hellscape, we've seen blood. We've seen tears. We've seen an entire society brought to its knees. But it has all happened because of one man. One man is responsible for all of this.
I jump in front of him and I say, I jump in front of you, Justin, and I say, yeah! And then I rev my engine and then I step back behind Justin.
And that one man is Brian Brushwood.
I jump in front of Justin. I jump in front of Justin.
He pitched you out into the cold when all this was happening. He wouldn't let you in the bunker, and you have been on this path of destruction because you never got an apology.
So, Brian,
it's time for you to finally bring this all to a close by apologizing without any kind of qualifiers to Bryce right now. And then I start mimicking to the crowd. Say you're sorry. Say you're sorry. All right, go ahead, Brian. No more bloodshed.
I step into a stark white spotlight in the center of the arena.
You have a cue set up.
sad piano music starts playing in the background.
No, hold on. Wait a minute. I mean, like, I know we're going to get to the apology, but you got to warm them up. So just do the fire eating real quick. You already got a spotlight.
I say, shut up, bro.
Can you bring the lights down?
Yeah. So I say, you know, it's a mixed up world we live in. Sometimes people make mistakes. Try to take everything in with a grain of salt. Sometimes you spit out bloody phlegm as a result of poisoned salt.
Good metaphor, is yelled from the back row.
It wouldn't be a Brian monologue without a metaphor.
Let's see.
I'm glad to see that hasn't changed, Brian.
I think I know what you want to hear. But then there's what you need to hear.
All right.
And those words are, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for turning my back on you. I'm sorry for doing podcasts with Justin while the world burned. I'm sorry that you were left isolated alone, went to Vegas, became a superpowered mech and mayor / god governor of Las Vegas. But seems to me, kid, you did pretty well for yourself. So in some ways, not all, in some ways, I feel a little bit of responsibility for how well you've done. I'm proud of you.
That's off the last part. It was good before.
I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say, Bryce, is you're welcome. And then I rev the chainsaw and I come running at him because I'm going to murder this son of a bitch.
Outside of kayfabe? Ow.
You owe it all to me. And then I come attacking.
All right, so Brian charges Bryce after a total inability to say an honest I'm sorry. Certainly ended all conflict. What happens, Andrew?
Bryce deftly deflects Brian's blow, punches Brian in the face. Brian goes sliding across the floor, and the announcer says, this rumble's not ready to start until our celebrity referee is here. Ladies and gentlemen, direct your eyes to the ceiling as we bring in our celebrity referee. You know him already. Probably one of the most famous people of the 20th century. And he's been there throughout this journey.
The whole time.
I give you Hitler.
Oh, no! God.
How are we going to get a fair shake from Hitler?
Music plays, martial music lowers, and they're in a referee uniform, but it is Hitler. I was like...
I was like, Hitler, I'm sorry, Mr. Hitler, can we trust you to be fair in this?
Nein!
Oh, man.
Ja, ja.
I run over to Justin, shaking off, kind of rubbing my jaw. I was like, whew, all right, I don't think we're going to get a fair shake in this fight, buddy. I think we're going to have to straight up murder him.
Hitler, well, okay. Bryce, so number one,
and Bryce openly they high five each other.
Yeah, all right. Let's just gloss over the "I'll back your play" thing. We'll deal with that later.
Oh, it was that not what you wanted? I thought I nailed it, man.
Let's not. I'm not here to litigate the past. Oh, let's move forward. I grab the mic and say, Hitler. You did pretty good with a one-front war. You lost a two-front war. But guess what? Now you've got a three-front war on your hands. Let's all kill Hitler. Who cares? There's no rules. And I run and charge after Hitler to punch him in the face.
I take just a moment and put a hand to my chin and think, wow, it was right in front of us the whole time. We always think of it as a theoretical scenario of what would you do? Would I rather kill Bryce or Hitler? I would rather kill Hitler. And I turn to Bryce and I say, Bryce, you're cool. And I go to join killing Hitler. So I come running up trying to kill the referee as well.
I attempt to do one of my epic uppercuts on Hitler, sending him stories into the air.
You do an uppercut as Hitler goes back, Brian swipes with his chainsaw and decapitates Hitler.
Oh, we did it. We did it. And I check in real quick with my Hitler based AI, and I was just like, you're cool with this, right?
I guess so now, Brian.
Okay, good. All right, good.
I mean, I guess it's better to apologize than ask for, you know,
I mean, when it comes to the chance to kill Hitler, come on.
Ladies and gentlemen, The match is over because we lost our referee.
We can't have a fight to the death now.
Okay.
What are we going to do? We can't have a fight to the death without a referee.
I take a moment. I disarm myself. I take off the chainsaw and just sort of, you know, my whole body posture indicates that I'm relaxed. And I was like, so what? We reschedule, Bryce? We'll do this like next Thursday or something?
I don't know when I'm going to get another Hitler anytime soon.
Well, we're going to have to book another venue. Or can we use the same venue? Is there anything happening?
I own this whole town, all the people in it. You, by stepping in it, I own you. So.
Great. Okay, so.
Hey, guys, wait a minute. What do you say? I know the fans are still here and they're watching. Just for old time's sake, what, you want to like get a meal? You guys hungry? You want to go?
That actually sounds really good.
Like, let's just talk this out.
Killing Hitler got
Bryce,
me real
and remember,
hungry.
You could tell them, you know, there's a Las Vegas Oakland Burbank Hyperloop that you have.
Oh yeah, you know, that's right. I have it goes straight there. It goes direct to Justin and Andrew's house.
Well, so
it's a two-stop.
How about we do this? We will pinky promise, and you know how I feel about the pinky promise. Now I don't have a pinky in my right hand anymore, but my left hand pinky promise. Don't worry, nothing's underboard there. We'll be back. You give us a reschedule date. We'll do this fight to the death.
Brian, I'll be back. Your work is here, repairing your broken relationship with the man whose vengeance, because of your abandonment, has created a monster. We have an opportunity. I can go take care of Andrew and Ashley if they're alive. It's time that you finally made things right.
Well, you know what? Let's do that right now. Bryce, now that the lights aren't on and I'm not putting on a show, I think I could say that I've always valued your hard work.
The lights are all still on and we're still in the center of
minutes
of full Coliseum.
Justin, I'm trying to have a moment here.
I'm with you. All right.
I've always appreciated everything you've done, and I'm really, genuinely, without qualifications, sorry that you got left out of the shelter.
Thank you, Brian. Well, you know, what if we did this?
Huh?
If I hold you as collateral.
Oh, I thought you were going to say join us and we could make it all three of us could.
No, I mean, I'm still pretty upset. I mean, it's been a minute.
Okay.
Like you remember when you just like gave me that apology burn like
well,
5 minutes
okay,
ago?
Well, okay, but I mean that's the show, and I know we're still doing the show right now. I know the spotlight's still on right now, but yeah, I mean surely you could appreciate the comedic timing of that. I mean that was it was the one play.
Well, I don't know what you guys were planning on, but I don't know that that was your only move. Specifically.
Okay, you know what? Let's put a pin in this. Okay. What? Why? How about we're just gonna run out?
Like, wait, hold on. You're gonna put a pin in him taking you hostage?
Yes. I'm trying to work out a thing here, Justin. Why?
Now you're telling Justin to play along. Okay. Okay. I get the dynamic here.
I'm just saying, what say we reschedule this? We'll be right back. We're just going to run, save my wife, my kids, Justin, Ashley. Oh, I guess my wife and kids are dead. That's the one thing.
Hitler's head is still talking. This guy's worse than me.
Without looking, I just kind of kick to the right and hope to knock Hitler's decapitated head a few feet away. Well, I mean, are you gonna make a thing out of this, Bryce? Can we just come back and fight to the death, like gentlemen?
I'm gonna put you in a very tiny cage, and Justin can come back to save you when he's done checking out.
You're gonna split the party. You're gonna split the party. This is, I mean, it's your city, so I guess you get to.
Whoa, Bryce, come on. You know Brian. It took a lot for him to say that he's sorry. At least put him in like the hotel suites that the Saudi Arabian prince did to the rest of his corrupt family.
Oh, and you know just for old times, look, we'll still fight to the death. I understand we got to
fight to death.
But maybe at one of these theaters.
Don't put him in the cage. Come on. We're making progress here.
For old times' sake.
The gesture deserves another. We'll leave Brian here. Just put him in a nice room.
But
I'll be right back.
I'll tell you what. Also, trade Z's. You want to make some money? Make all your followers happy? Let's just do the magic show one more time. We'll do the bizarre magic show. I'll do the fire eating bit, the whole thing. I don't know if I could do it with just one hand, but I'll try.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on, Brian. There's only one problem.
What?
You don't, if I'm gone, you don't have anybody who knows all the cues and where to set everything up. If only there was one person who's set everything up in the past and maybe could set up one last magic show.
I very slowly and deliberately raise an eyebrow and look directly over at Bryce expectantly.
So I just want to make it clear that the two of you who I assumed died and left me for dead in the actual apocalypse – have come back and want me to tech your stage show instead of killing you to death.
Well, you still get to kill us to death. We'll still fight to the death. Just at a future date.
Nothing's changing.
In the meantime, we make people happy. We relive the old days. Maybe we remember what was great about things before everybody died of the disease.
Hey, I'm just a random guy in the front row. What if I got a suggestion?
Yeah,
here.
What's up?
I used to do group therapy, by the way. Okay. Worked for Jonestown, went there, did some sessions from there. The David Koresh cult, I helped those people out, did some sessions there. Spent 20 years working in North Korea, helping them work on, community relations and stuff. So I have a lot of good ideas. I'm very in demand. What if, Bryce, you tech their show for the audience here, right? You tech their show.
Okay.
Then after the show, if some of the people are still around and still hanging around, you could do a little show for them.
You could do a DJ set.
Me?
Yeah.
So Brian would be your opening act.
Oh, look at you. You finally made it. You're a headliner in Vegas. And I'm just your opening act. Wouldn't that be great?
I own Vegas.
Well, yes. But have you ever had Brian Brushwood open for you? That would be amazing.
In fact, I'll tell you what, the signs just came in for the show. Look how tiny Brian's name is.
Oh, it's so tiny.
So my much name's, bigger.
Your name is huge. It says Bryce, B-R-Y-C-E.
It looks like Brian's like some sort of legalese that you just have to put on the sign because otherwise it would be a problem. Anyway, I'm going to get on this Hyperloop and go try to rescue Andrew and my wife, which is the point of this year-long journey. Bye!
Bye. All right, take care, Justin.
All right.
Did he make it? Andrew, did Justin make it out?
Yeah, it's fast. The Hyperloop is fast, Brian. Don't you get the point of the Hyperloop?
No, I meant is Justin fast enough to escape the guards who almost surely are blocking his egress?
No, they're actually very helpful.
Oh, damn it. Okay.
I don't know if you know this. Bryce's real beef is with you, Brian.
No, I don't think so.
just doesn't track. Sorry. No.
Hi, Lyle, group therapist here.
Yeah, what's up, Lyle?
Lyle! Bryce, who would you say your biggest grievance is with?
Oh, I think it would be with Brian A. Brushwood.
Okay, cool.
Kicked me.
Is this Brian here? Is this Brian Brushwood here?
I believe so.
That's look, I'm sorry, Lyle? That's your name?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Like, this is the kind of thing Bryce says all the time. It's fine.
Yeah. Bryce,
that's what I've been saying since you left me for dead years ago.
Let me ask you a question.
Don't you remember the puppet theater like three journey quests ago? I mean, look, Lyle, he means well. It's just, you know.
See, well, Lyle.
Little therapy here. Let's talk about something. Bryce. When you masqueraded as Replicant Bryce and went on the road trip with him, clearly dropping as many clues as possible that it was actually you, because the only time you and Replicant Bryce were in the same point was when what was obviously a fake latex doll was torn apart that tasted like Karo syrup, but nobody picked up on it because they're too self-obsessed. How did it make you feel when you gave them a chance to restart things all the way back in Beef Jerky World, all the way back in Texas with Replicant Bryce, when they then shoved you into the corner of the Winnebago, when they mistreated you again, and you went through all of these abuses over and over again? How did that make you feel?
Brian's phone's cell phone's ringing.
Oh, hang on. I reached down with my left hand, my one good hand.
It's like, a flip phone, by the way.
Go time. What's up?
Hey, it's Justin. They got cell service on this Hyperloop. It's great.
That's convenient.
How are things going?
Arriving now at the Oakland station.
They're talking. Bunch of words. Okay,
whatever you do, just don't make it worse by the time I get there. Hmm. All right? Because there's going to be a real chance that I'm going to bring back Ashley and Andrew.
Okay.
If we're at a certain death scenario, literally just make sure that things are better by the time that I get there. Okay. I'm getting off. I'm sorry.
Okay,
bye.
Okay. All right. Bye. Click. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. So we're about done here. Everything's wrapped up. We're all.
I was gonna say the actions made me feel like he was being selfish. I don't know if taking a phone call in the middle of my answer in the therapy session about the situation is a direct parallel to it. I might say it's an even direct act
of
selfishness.
So
we have some solutions, Bryce. You've brought up. I know. I've been talking about this with Bryce before because he's trying to be the peacemaker here. Bryce had suggested one solution was complete dismemberment.
Yeah.
Okay.
That'd be great. I would love that.
What if we meet halfway at partial dismemberment?
Well, he did talk about reverse organ transplants. Instead of putting pig parts in a human, what if you put your organs inside of pigs?
I mean, you know what? Let's do one better. I'll crawl all my organs. I'll just crawl inside a pig and then bust out like Alien. I'll go bleh because I got this chainsaw arm. I can carve my way out of the pig.
Interesting but cruel, Brian. There is a cruelty streak here.
It would be a dead pig. Come on. I'm not a savage.
Hold on. Do I find my wife?
Yeah, you go to your apartment. Ashley's like, hey, you've been gone a while, Justin. What's going on?
I'm like, you wouldn't believe it if I told you. Come on to the Hyperloop. And we get on the Hyperloop and head down to Burbank.
Wait. Bonnie's coming over with Brian's kids, by the way.
Oh, my God. They're alive. Let's get on the Hyperloop. You don't know how any of this is happening.
Yeah.
In fact, I call Brian.
I mean, like, yo, what's up? What's up?
Hey, man, what's up?
They're still talking. I'm trying to. Do you have any tricks to shut up therapists? I say in front of a therapist.
Sorry. We're gonna break it up here. Hey, by the way.
Okay. Sorry,
Brian. Your feelings hurt me, and your what you said hurt my feelings, and I'm gonna suggest that you and I go to a group therapy session.
All right, I fire up the chainsaw and I kill Lyle. I just shove it right through.
Guards! Yes, to the tiny cage!
I screaming against the pulling guards as they take me to the tiny cage. I was like, sorry, that wasn't personal, Bryce. I swear.
Make it
personal.
An extra dark tiny cage.
Ah, damn it.
Hi, I'm Kyle, Lyle's twin brother, and Brian. I don't want to wag my finger at you, but I'm going to do this. I'm uncomfortable with the choices you have made.
I turned to the guards and I said, just give me 10 seconds. Just 10 seconds. And I revved the chainsaw hand again.
Smash cut to the Hyperloop stopping in Burbank. I run into Andrew's apartment. Is Andrew there?
Hey, what's up, Justin? It's been a while.
Oh, my God. You survived on granola bars and bottled water. It's almost as if
it wasn't really that
your entire
bad
life
here,
for this.
Actually. it was more of a Texas sort of thing and more of a voluntary kind of thing. It was a voluntary apocalypse. I don't know if you knew this.
Wait, really? Everyone else is fine?
Well, I mean, didn't you wonder, like, why you had amusement parks, beef jerky stores, and all this other stuff going on?
Not really. No, things got really out of hand really fast.
I mean, did you think the Zeppelin manufacturing industry, you know, was really going to just start up after the apocalypse?
You seem to know a lot about our journey. How did you follow it?
Oh, because I've been listening to the Journey Quest podcast. I'm a Patreon supporter, by the way.
That's amazing. You want to come with us to Bryce Vegas? We're at what would seem to be the end of the story.
Sure. How are we going there? Hyperloop?
The Hyperloop.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I got 12 minutes.
All right. So me, Andrew, Ashley, Bonnie, and the kids all get on the Hyperloop on the way to Bryce Vegas, and let's have us emerge. I triumphantly walk in and I'm like, all right. Also, by the way, I'm explaining to everybody in the Hyperloop, don't worry. I left Brian there. So apologize to Bryce and everything will be smoothed over. If I know my best friend, Brian, then everything will be totally smooth. We will be welcomed as returning heroes now that all of these loose ends have been tied up. I held up my end of the bargain, and Brian's not one to leave me hanging. Here we go.
You're about to emerge. The Hyperloop is, like, on its way. A scientist comes running in, right, and whispers to Bryce, boss, we figured it out. You know how, like, we were watching Empire Strikes Back and Han Solo got frozen in carbonite and you said, that's really cool. I'd like to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. You told me to make that happen.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really quite paying attention, but I kind of figured out something kind of cool. I thought, because I was eating like a sugar daddy at the time, I thought you said Carmelite. So I figured out a way to freeze a man in delicious, chewy caramel.
Wow. That's a longer explanation for the wow.
Right. This is the hallmark of all the
so
best
stories. So what I'm saying is if you had somebody in a
have
tiny
a new
little container.
The sentence, I was eating a sugar
free,
daddy at the time.
We could freeze him in Carmelite.
I see. We'll prepare the Carmelite treatment.
And Bryce, this is a really tiny cage. This cage is super small.
And how dark is it?
It's very dark in here.
And Bryce turns to Justin and yells to Brian, rather, any last words for either one of you?
I emerge with the entire group singing Hey Jude as a sign of peace. Na, 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 hey Jude, Judy, now!
Brian is strapped against the wall, and all of a sudden, delicious caramel starts to pour over him.
I try to eat as much of the caramel as I can, and all the while thinking about how, well, there goes my diet. Nom, 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 nom.
Bryce, everyone's alive. As it turned out, the apocalypse really wasn't all that widespread. And Andrew pointed out a lot of really, really, really gigantic logical points that we should have latched onto way earlier in this story.
Nom, 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 nom.
No, don't put Brian in Carmelite. We can all have a happy ending. Not in the weird, just in the story. Moving on.
Nom, 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 nom.
Brian tries to eat, and his belly distends tremendously. He eats an amazing, probably 40 pounds of caramel. So now he just looks sort of fat, really, really fat.
You've gotten your final punishment. There is nothing worse than you could do to him. Please, he's had enough.
Oh, but no, now he's a solid block of caramelite frozen there, his mouth open. And his stomach distended with caramel. Oh. And now Bryce says, you may have him. Just science, like, yeah, just don't put it out in the sun because it'll melt.
Yeah.
Well, how do I get him out of the caramelite?
Ice cream?
Yeah, ice cream. I mean, you just melt it, really.
Yeah, I think he quite literally just gave you the answer, Justin.
the question is to Brian's family, Justin, Andrew, everybody, Ashley, like, do you want him out?
Man, that sounds like a cliffhanger of a question.
Brian's like, I can hear you.
Like, you know, just mouth it out.
Well,
so, yeah,
I mean,
you now have, Bryce says, I give you frozen fat, Brian.
Well, how long would it take to melt him?
I mean, the hot Las Vegas sun? I mean, 2 minutes.
Oh, I mean, like, so we can just go some, like, to a restaurant, just leave him outside?
Yeah.
All right. You guys want to do that?
He's learned his lesson.
Death would be too good for you.
So we go to, the party goes to Johnny Rockets.
Yeah, or you go to Bubba Gump's Shrimp Company.
Yeah.
Did you invite Bryce?
Bryce? It would be our honor if you would join us for a meal. And don't worry. Before I left, I stole Brian's credit card. He's going to be paying for it.
I would never do it, but I can't believe you did it.
Oh, I'd be happy to join you.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Na, 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 na.
Journey Quest. Journey now. Has been quested.
Woo! That was a surprise. I did not realize we were going to wrap up the story. That was amazing.
Wow.
We're there. It's done.
Incredible. Incredible. Incredible.
Oh. So, anybody have any pics?
Hey, I saw the Avengers 2 more times in the last week since we last talked.
Wow. So did you like it?
Sorry.
Do you want to do Avengers as after things?
Yeah, I do.
Sure.
Cool. Let's do some quick picks. So that is the wrap of Journey Quest.
Yeah.
Journey Quest.
I mean, we can start, you know, who's to say? Yeah, if you guys enjoyed it, let us know.
Yeah. There's always room for Toonie Quest. We have to work on a better name.
I think some form of adventure could continue.
Oh, yeah. If only we'd been planning, or one of us had been planning a new adventure.
Oh. Oh. So I've got a pick. I just finished the book last night. It's called When Breath Becomes Air. It is from a neuroscientist and a neurologist who...
Paul Kalanithi?
Yes. He's dead. And it's about him finding out at the age of 35 that he has really bad cancer, very aggressive cancer, and that he's going to die. And he goes from somebody who, as a resident, you know, constantly is dealing with death, and instead finds death making, as he describes it, a personal visit. And it's an interesting book because it tells the story and then just sort of takes a then there's a hiccup. There's suddenly an epilogue written by his wife about the rest of his tale, and it is not as depressing as you would think it is. In fact, it actually is very positive and forward focused. At the end, you know, when you hear from an actual human being who knew this man as her spouse and life partner, you know, describes his final days, it's a bit heart-wrenching, but in a shockingly fulfilling way. It's a wonderful read, and I did it on Audible. Don't worry, you're not going to be crying in public, but just when you get to that last chapter, maybe make sure you're not out and about.
Cool.
My pick is... Man, I don't know what my pick is going to be. Andrew, you go.
Bryce?
Oh, I got a pick. I just finished a game that I had been playing apparently for 90 hours over the past few months, since I got my Switch. It is Picross S. I really love puzzle games and logic games, and so Picross S is a really well-featured Picross game.
What is Picross?
So Picross, they give you a grid that sort of looks like a Sudoku grid, mm-hmm. sort of, but it has numbers on the top of the rows and on the left of the columns. And so you use the numbers to determine what squares to fill in. So like in this column here, it says 5, 3, 1. That means that there are 5 squares that are filled in next to each other. There's at least 1 space and then 3 that are filled in next to each other, and then at least 1 space and then a 1. And so you use that logic of, okay, well, if this is the configuration, then X squares will always be filled in. These squares definitely cannot be filled in.
This is one of those games where you eliminate everything that can't be true and then inductively figure out what it must be.
Yeah, and it has its own special mode called Mega Picross, where it will merge 2 rows or columns together. And you'll have to. It has its own rules of how you determine what squares are filled in between both of them. But it's really great. It has a really good tutorial. Also, if you don't know anything about Picross, this tutorial will give you pretty much everything you need to know to kind of get into it. I spent 90 hours on this game, and wow. I want even more of it. It's really good. It also has multiplayer, which is weird. Like you play the same puzzle at the same time. And you just get points for being the person to fill in a correct square.
Oh, so the one to work faster than the other guy?
Yeah, basically. But you could use it cooperatively. And it also has assists and other hints and stuff if you're not used to Picross. But it's Picross S on the Switch. It's $8, and I spent 90 hours with it.
90 hours,
it's
wow.
It's incredible.
Hey, Bryce, you know what 90 hours is to me? A novel writing.
I expanded my brain.
Love hey, man, we just had a big breakthrough.
Boys, you don't need to fight about it.
And that was over a long period.
Quick one. Westworld, it's good now. Before it was bad. Now it's good.
I'm holding you up to that, Justin, because you know you'll get an angry phone call from me.
Yeah, I'm curious to know your opinion. Here's all I'll say. Even if you don't necessarily think it's good, it's at least interesting.
It's so much better. It's certainly better.
Cool. I'm excited. I can't wait. I have 2 picks. One, if you're not watching Barry on HBO, check out Barry.
I watched the first episode of it, and I enjoyed ? Does it get more exciting, better?
I would say for me, it's fun. It's interesting. Like Silicon Valley is just not a fun show for me anymore. You know, like I used to like Silicon Valley, and now Silicon Valley, it's like you're just like, we're going to do this plot line again. We're going to follow the characters doing this thing in, this thing in. Barry, at least, is kind of Barry. It's Bill Hader. He plays a Iraq War veteran who is now working as a hitman, gets sent to Los Angeles on a hit, and stumbles into an acting class led by Henry Winkler, a.k.a. the Fonz, and decides that he likes this acting thing. Meanwhile, he's still got to be a hitman. And Stephen Root is the guy who he works for. And Stephen Root's fantastic. I mean, the cast is amazing. Henry Winkler is Gene Constantino, this sort of kind of has-been actor teaching an acting class, is just a delight. So if you just kind of watch it for the performances kind of thing, I mean, I enjoy it a lot. So
awesome.
Cool. Justin, you seen this at all?
I have not yet, but I'm excited. It's only because we are digging our way out of a backlog of TV. But I'm excited to get to Barry because I love Bill Hader. I think Bill Hader is amazing.
So my other pick is, it's a Netflix doc. It's This Is Bob Hope, which Bob Hope's one of my heroes. I love Bob Hope, so I recommend check out This Is Bob Hope. Just a really amazing person in the 20th century that's worth – he had a show business career that spanned 100 years. So, kind of worth checking out. So, gentlemen, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.